What would happen if instead of composing predetermined assignments, college composition students could compose whatever they want to compose? What would happen if students could set their own deadlines and grade their own work? Find out as Assistant Professor Mason Joyner and I explore these questions with a few of our fellow English department colleagues. I'm Monica Mankin, and this is the English 101 Experiment. Welcome to the English 101 Experiment Podcast, Episode 3, Season 2. I'm Monica Mankin, a professor here at Delgado Community College in New Orleans, and I'm with my co-host.
I'm Mason Joyner, an assistant professor here at Delgado Community College, and today we have our guest.
And I'm Gina Ferreira. I'm an associate professor here at Delgado.
All right, great. Thanks for joining us,
yes,
Gina.
Thank you very much, Gina.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to talk to you today. We're focusing on, I guess, poetry's place in the composition classroom. So last time we talked generally about literature, but today we're going to dive into poetry specifically. And we have a piece of scholarship to help support this discussion. It's called Missing Link, Metacognition and the Necessity of Poetry in the Composition Classroom by poet and scholar Valerie Martinez. We'll dive into some of the, I guess maybe the theories of it, but also she has a lot of very practical assignments
yeah,
that she does
I noticed that as well.
With students. So I'm excited to dig into that. And Gina, you brought some texts for us today as well, right?
I did. I wanted us to look at the poem The Fish by Elizabeth Bishop, one called A House Called Tomorrow by Alberto Rios, and then Sky Jackson's Spoonrest Mammies.
I can get us started. I feel like most of my highlighting took place on page 38. This is where I really saw Martinez sort of making the case for why poetry is good in the composition classroom, like what it actually brings to the composition classroom. And I think I'm going to read one line from the middle of that page and then a small section that spills onto the next page.
Okay.
She says in the middle, "Further, poems are usually more concise than prose, thereby enabling students to focus their energies more intently." And I'm connecting that with the sentence that begins at the very bottom of that page. "They gain a heightened sense of awareness of the way words and sounds and syllables work. They learn to listen to language for its music and rhythms. They are asked to consider grammar and syntax and how they affect the meaning of a phrase or a sentence." And I think this selection stands out to me most because I mean, one of the reasons I like to work with poetry in the classroom as well, it gives us that opportunity to really zoom in. Even in earlier in class today, we looked at a poem that is about six lines, one sentence, and got to talk about this, like the actual grammar of the way the sentence is put together. And, you know, pulling one random sentence out of a longer work, a short story or an essay, is, I think, less effective than just really zooming in on something that is already small, mm-hmm. And able to be broken down in that way. What do y'all think?
Great minds think alike here, because I looked at that section too. And I think what she was saying and what I agree with is that I think when you give students poetry in composition class, it really allows them to listen to the language. Mm-hmm. And I think by listening to the language, that helps them find their own voice, which is so important, yeah. You know, in any kind of writing. So that part definitely mm-hmm. resonated with yeah. me, for sure.
Yeah. I love in classes, like, talking about assonance, you know, and things like that. Just, you hear that, do you hear that vowel sound echoed throughout the rest of this line or whatever? I just love conversations that go that way, just giving us that opportunity to just listen to the sounds of the language.
Yeah, and also maybe to see the relationship, the relationships that exist between words and poetry. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, kind of showing students that or giving examples of that definitely makes them think about their own relationships, their mm-hmm. own word choices.
I like her activity for revision where she has this, I think it's like the importance of place mm-hmm. exercise that she describes, where she has them describe a place, but then she asks them to turn that into a poem and then rewrite it. How that helps them just like cut the fat, right? Mm-hmm. And really think about precision and concision, which is like one of those editing and revision skills we want our students to develop.
Mm-hmm. I think another really practical thing from this, on that note of focus and concision and precision, is that she has the students work with epigrams.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I loved that.
And haiku.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That actually reminded me of one of your exercises, the turning the maxim.
Right.
I think where it's you're really like focusing on a very small piece of writing. Uh-huh. It reminded
that came
me of
from
that.
From an exercise that supposedly Fronto, Marcus Aurelius's tutor, would do with Marcus Aurelius, is take a maxim, a common saying, and put it in different words, like over and over and over again.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which is really cool and challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. Well, I think, too, with haiku, obviously, that's not very intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's a very friendly form, especially for students who are just so fearful of poetry.
Right.
And unfortunately, we see that a lot where students are very, it's like, you know, but I think the way that we can, the more we can present poems, obviously, the friendlier the genre is going to become for them.
Right. And I think Martinez mm-hmm. does mention that sort of lack of exposure to poetry.
Yeah.
And I think she talks about the neglect of poetry in students' education for learning to read and write. I like at the end because she does kind of come back to this question that we were exploring in our last mm-hmm. podcast, but I think kind of carries over here, where she in her conclusion addresses the absence, right? The absence of poetry, sort of the why.
Yeah.
Where she says there are several reasons for this absence besides the historical and disciplinary divisions between the fields of literature and rhetoric comp. Creative writing and composition classes have been viewed as separate endeavors, though often housed in the same department. And then additionally, that poets, including herself, do want to emphasize how poetry is distinct from drama, fiction, memoir, and exposition. So she's like this compartmentalizing that's happened in the academy, I guess, over the years is mm-hmm. part of that. But I liked her point about how now that we're moving into more interdisciplinary mm-hmm. Studies, where it's like this is the time to kind of bring this back and like,
right.
you know, reinvigorate our classrooms with poetry.
Yeah. On that lack of exposure, have y'all ever found, I feel like I see this a lot, where if asked to write a poem, even if it's based on a poem that we read in class, that is totally different, the students, when they start to write their own, believe it has to rhyme.
Even if the model doesn't rhyme,
yeah. you know?
Yeah.
I think that's so symbolic, iconic of their lack of exposure to what poetry can be, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very basic, it's like back to the nursery rhyme.
Yeah.
You know, that when you're a kid, that's what you think poems are,
mm-hmm.
you know? I had another excerpt where it, this is in the section of this article that's called Reading and Metaphorical Thinking. And mm-hmm. she says at the beginning of the paragraph, in the middle of the page, there is a logic in the metaphor, mm-hmm. and goes on to say that here there is a cognitive leap between thing and idea. Metaphors suggest that we can visualize abstract ideas in terms of the concrete things we already know. This is creative and logical thought at the same time. As we urge our students to express what is unfamiliar, new, and logical in the range of their essay assignments, metaphorical poetry offers them a means for doing so. By reading and discussing poetic metaphors, students are challenged to understand cognitive pathways poets use to challenge the familiar. By using metaphorical poetry in the composition classroom, we encourage a meta-linguistic awareness of the innovative, whether the students are writing descriptive essays, research papers, analyses, or arguments. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I have found, I don't know why the word nourishing is coming to my mind, but as I've started to bring more poetry into my classroom, having those discussions about metaphors and then mm-hmm. being able to kind of transfer that to an essay has, I think, really helped students to, like you were saying, like, find their voice, find mm-hmm. some innovative way mm-hmm. of connecting ideas.
Yeah.
And that metaphorical thinking, I think, is, it's really important. It reminds me of Robert Frost, who says that I'm going to botch it, but it's something along the lines of if you don't understand metaphor, you're not fit to be loosed upon the world. And so, so for me, I think it's tying into that not just metacognition, but how we interpret and how we make the abstract concrete.
Right.
Yeah. And I think kind of like playing on that, to me, when I read that passage, I thought, well, if students and if any of us really are going to mature as writers, we really need to understand metaphors and we need to be comfortable with them.
Right. Yeah.
And so that was something that, and of course, bringing poetry to students, mm-hmm. that's going to take time to erode that resistance maybe. But I think the more we bring poetry to students, the more comfortable they're going to be.
Yeah. And even in a more rhetoric-based class, I mean, it's almost unavoidable that, like, in consuming works of rhetoric, that metaphor is incredibly effective, rhetorically speaking, mm-hmm. right? I don't know. It's like even if you feel like poetry applies less to their academic pursuits than rhetoric does, I mean, metaphor is a poetic device and a rhetorical device,
mm-hmm.
and maybe the secret is they're the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of things. I think the part where she does talk about the poem as argument, it's Charles Simic's poem Stone, mm-hmm. and then she talks about the way that the poem itself presents a compelling argument, mm-hmm. but then having students then imitate that to create their own argument.
Yeah.
I thought that sounds like a fun 102, English 102.
Super fun. Yeah.
Or even at the end of 101 when you want to introduce argument to them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, again, Mason, it reminded me mm-hmm. of your parable exercise. Yeah. So you already have all these playful writing exercises that you bring into your class.
I would love to add this to the repertoire. But I definitely start it to digest further and figure out how I might be able to work it in. Because, it's so interesting that it's not like, I mean, you think of an argument that has to be important.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But the argument here is to quote Martinez, the argument is that it is favorable to be like a stone.
Yeah, which I think to go back to something you just said earlier, Gina, about like making these things we want our students to learn less intimidating mm-hmm. for them.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking, you know, you could use this or you could use like kind of any object-based poem and kind of use that as an argument, you know, as mm-hmm. a way to kind of introduce argument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, because we were just talking about metaphor. I mean, that's indelibly buried in there, right? You mm-hmm. can't write that poem without metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it's that small space, right? Mm-hmm. That small space, right. That heightened attention to language.
There's something about the small space and the heightened attention to language with poems that I've been thinking about for a couple of days just recently, but I'm curious what y'all think. Thinking about like the syntax and the grammar of a poem and how, unlike prose, poetry has the added syntactical tool of lineation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How do you think we can talk to English composition students about lineation, or what would be the benefit, I guess, of talking about lineation with basic, you know, Comp 1 students?
You mean as applicable to like academic writing?
I guess, or? Yeah, as applicable to writing, I suppose, to understanding how we put thoughts and phrases together, maybe.
I don't know. This is maybe to add something else to the mm-hmm. mix.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like we almost kind of need to present composition in a way that's, I mean, certainly that, but also in a way that's maybe similar to like what exists inside of a frame, mm-hmm. you know, a painting that exists inside yeah. of a frame. And kind of maybe the more that we can kind of do that, the more that, you know, we can get students to think about their own composition and,
right.
you know, what is going to exist inside of that composition. And to almost present it that elementary.
Yeah.
But yeah, like uh-huh. get them, like I did this, and this is kind of going away from our topic today, but I've been getting students to look at paintings and to kind of see what's inside of mm-hmm. the painting and what exists and why is it there kind of thing. And getting them to write about that. And my hope is that that's going to get them, that will transfer into their
totally.
Essays yeah. and mm-hmm. composition. You know, why is it there? Why are you placing it there?
Uh-huh.
Because I think a lot of us kind of have these visual, you know, we see things in a very visual kind of way.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, Monica.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, this reminds me of another bit from the article, page 40. She's talking about going over an E.E. Cummings poem with
yes.
them.
Yes. mm-hmm.
E.E. Cummings was the first poet I think I loved, even
oh,
though
he's
I had,
my hero.
I had no idea
yeah,
what
right.
I was reading.
I was like, you mean he doesn't capitalize yeah. anything?
Yeah. She says, I have asked students, if Cummings' arrangement of words on the page affects how we read, then how might your readers be affected by the visual visual presentation of your paper?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's kind of what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
is imagining this is how you present your paper in this frame. You've designed the way it looks. Does that support the way your reader should read it?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think with lineation particularly, like, I mean, what you're all talking about is something that Martinez is really touching upon with the metacognition, is just making students more aware of the decision. Like, why is this mm-hmm. thing? Why are you doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Right.
Yeah. Did you think about this? Or did this just like the mess that you made because you're not thinking at all?
Uh-huh.
But I think, too, like with line, it's also allowing for that deeper reading, that interpretation of like, mm-hmm. well, what happens if we just isolate the line? What is the poet in jamming? And then like mm-hmm. kind of helping them develop that vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, what are they doing to the sentence through the line? Are yeah. there sentences? So it's just, it's talking about how is this poet making meaning and how's the line contributing
yeah.
to our interpretation of that, and how the kind of is it a slow drip of information? Mm-hmm. Is it a rush mm-hmm. to an end?
Yeah.
Like what, you know, it's also the pacing.
Yeah.
So,
I love the way you said that. What are they doing to the yeah. sentence with the line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Excellent.
Yeah.
I love that,
yeah.
that wording. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we talk about, the poems that we're looking at today?
Yeah. And I have one more thing I wanted
to
mention, because I liked that this word kept coming up again and again in Martinez's article, and it's the word eloquence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I'm going to start using this word more, mm-hmm. especially when we're talking about poetry, but carrying that through to when we are working on something of a more mm-hmm. academic nature, any text, right? It's the eloquence,
yeah.
like such a good word for mm-hmm. like what we mean when we're talking about the way rhythm and, mm-hmm. and sound and meaning all yeah. kind of come together. Definitely better than perfection, right? Mm-hmm. Which I'm trying to get yeah. that, get rid of that word mm-hmm. yeah. in our vocabulary. But eloquence
yeah.
is a really good word.
And so even when we start talking about prose like Baldwin, right?
Yes.
Eloquence is still at the front of the conversation.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how is that eloquence created and then being able to kind of like mm-hmm. work into the text that way?
Yeah.
And eloquence is kind of more of a way of being, whereas perfection to me kind of has a punitive, puritanical quality
oh, yeah.
to it.
For sure.
You know, eloquence is more elevated and kind of an ideal sort of thing. I love to teach the fish. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, this is such a perfect narrative, and it's what you want a narrative to be. Mm-hmm. You know,
so
how
concrete.
It's concrete, mm-hmm. and it's all about the writer's observations.
Let's hear the fish.
Sure. Okay. The fish, Elizabeth Bishop. I caught a tremendous fish and held him inside the boat, half out of water, with my hook fast in a corner of his mouth. He didn't fight. He hadn't fought at all. He hung, a grunting weight, battered and venerable and homely. Here and there his brown skin hung in strips like ancient wallpaper, and its pattern of darker brown was like wallpaper, shapes like full-blown roses, stained and lost through age. He was speckled with barnacles, fine rosettes of lime, and infested with tiny white sea lice. And underneath, two or three rags of green weed hung down, while his gills were breathing in the terrible oxygen. The frightening gills, fresh and crisp with blood that can cut so badly. I thought of the coarse white flesh, packed in like feathers, the big bones and the little bones, the dramatic reds and blacks of his shiny entrails, and the pink swim bladder like a big peony. I looked into his eyes, which were far larger than mine, but shallower and yellower, the irises backed and packed with tarnished tinfoil, seen through the lenses of old scratched isinglass. They shifted a little, but not to return my stare. It was more like the tipping of an object toward the light. I admired his sullen face, the mechanism of his jaw. And then I saw from his lower lip, if you could call it a lip, grim, wet, and weapon-like, hung five old pieces of fish line, or four in a wire leader with the swivel still attached, with all their five big hooks grown firmly in his mouth, a green line frayed at the end where he broke it, two heavier lines, and a fine black thread still crimped from the strain and snap when it broke, and he got away. Like metals with their ribbons frayed and wavering, a five-haired beard of wisdom trailing from his aching jaw. I stared and stared, and victory filled up the little rented boat from the pool of bilge where oil had spread a rainbow around the rusted engine to the baler rusted orange, the sun-cracked thwarts, the oarlocks on their strings, the gunnels, until everything was rainbow, rainbow, rainbow. And I let the fish go.
Thank you. That was nice.
Thank you, Gina.
It's nice reading.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What I think happens in this poem that's just so terrific is it's about the poet's observations and how those observations help this moment to become transcendent.
Yeah.
You know, where there's something transformational that happens. It's an ordinary thing. You know, Bishop's going to go out, or the speaker in the poem is going to go out and catch a fish. Mm-hmm. And although that's what she sets out to do, that isn't really what happens. Mm-hmm. And she begins to notice this fish and really these unique details. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, to me, this is the perfect narrative. Yeah. And it would be a perfect narrative if it was written as it's a narrative poem, but if you wrote this in an essay, I tell them this would be like, this is perfect, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's eloquent.
It's eloquent.
It's eloquent. There we go.
I feel like so many of the, you know, the greatest narrative essays, like the ones packaged in those readers that we used to have, are that same thing, a massive realization packed mm-hmm. into a tiny moment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. That's like, that's so archetypal of a good narrative.
Mm-hmm. And it's also when the ordinary becomes extraordinary mm-hmm. through the observations that are being made. Mm-hmm. And you know, how many times, I mean, we've probably, nothing ever extraordinary. Well, it doesn't have to be. Nothing ever extraordinary happens in my life. Well, it's really about something ordinary that becomes mm-hmm. bigger.
So, Gina, do you have your students write, like, do they write their own poem in the style of this? Or is it just as a kind of like an example of narrative and how
it's usually narrative works? It's usually an example of narrative. And one thing else I wanted to say about this poem is, to me, everything is hinged on the word tremendous.
Mm. Yes.
And I point that out to my students. It would be a different poem if she said, I caught a big fish.
Yes.
You know, tremendous is the word. And then she, in this poem, she kind of goes about to show why this fish yeah. is tremendous. And so this is also, to me, a lesson in word choice mm-hmm. and the importance of word choice and how, you know, looking at this narrative, how she's going to really set out to really establish why this fish mm-hmm. is tremendous.
So then it's also demonstrating, you know, like main idea and support.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It might be a fun exercise to actually have them read it as the poem, but then have it on in another document as prose.
Yeah. Right.
To then kind of look at the structure, mm-hmm. but then, you know, it's because we're not distracted by those line breaks. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you were first exposed to this poem in an educational setting, like by a teacher, say?
It was definitely like in an American literature class, mm-hmm. like in mm-hmm. college.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was too.
Yeah.
I don't know. That I think that says something, that we were all exposed to this poem in a class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not a composition class, but right. what a class.
Yeah, it was mm-hmm. it was a literature course. Yeah. It was just, we were reading Bishop.
Yeah.
When I first was introduced to this poem, that line, the terrible oxygen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the way that,
yeah.
that hit me is like, oh yeah, that poor fish. Yeah. Like
the
oxygen is
gills,
death for
right,
them.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
And then also just bilge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bilge.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to use
yes.
that in a poem.
I think the one that always gets me the most is his brown skin hung in strips like ancient wallpaper.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The idea of like a wallpaper from before wallpaper.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
The five-haired beard of wisdom.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think it stands the test of time.
Yes.
It's accessible,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think yeah. is important if you mm-hmm. are bringing poetry in to make it mm-hmm. something that students can.
Even though it's rich with vocabulary,
sure.
that we probably
yeah.
have to dig into.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
The vocabulary is not structured opaquely.
Yeah. No,
right.
no. And actually, you just reminded me of something else in Martinez's piece where she's talking about like the syntactic shackles. I really, that came mm-hmm. from somebody else she was mm-hmm. quoting, but I liked that phrase because she was arguing that, like, students writing, it's not a matter of a lack of vocabulary. It's really not understanding how to move sentence parts around, how to move that vocabulary around in a compelling way. This is an interesting mix of poems that you brought. Yeah. So which one do you want to talk about next?
The one that I also love, and I don't really use it as, I use this more as a writing prompt. And it's A House Called Tomorrow by Alberto Rios. And I like to use this as a prompt because he starts off, I mean, the poem starts off so quickly. You are not 15, 12, or 17. You are 100 wild centuries. And so, like, we talk about, like, what really is 100 wild centuries? You know, what does that mean? And then also, you know, kind of the other things, you're kind of, you were the breaking news of the century. And so, like, so many of these, like, and this poem really, like, students get excited about this poem, you know, like you can really. And so, like, usually what I do at the beginning of the semester is that, like, I'll ask them, like, what is your breaking news of the century? What is that going to be? And I'll have them do, like, kind of a brief writing assignment on that. And so I feel like this is a good way to often start the semester. Because it's kind of a poem that's all about possibilities. And it's about breaking away from, you know, like, this might have been your trouble in the past, but it doesn't have to stay your trouble. And so I think the students, our students, really respond to that.
I love that.
And I love that that idea is expressed in that third to last couplet, which was one that I highlighted.
Look back.
Look back only for as long as you must. Then go forward into the history you will make.
I know, I was also just going to point to that because I think as far as, like, the wild century, like, just kind of the way he is playing with the idea of time and your position within time.
Go forward into the
history.
Excellent.
Beautiful poem. I can see adding this to the early sets of poems that we already have our students read and maybe allowing it. Seems like it could also go nicely with, like, Chen Chen's self-portrait, Charisma Price's imitation of that, like, because you are kind of looking at yourself in a way,
and,
specific way.
Sort of like Stone, I think this also is a good way to look at argument in poetry. I also highlighted, I think, one, two, three, four, five, six, six couplets down, the bad do not win. Not finally, no matter how loud they are. We simply would not be here if that were so. I love the very subtle, you know, logical steps being taken there. That we could totally break down and talk about the logic.
And then the other, be good, then better, write books, cure disease, make us proud, make yourself proud. Like, that's so, I think, inspirational for our students, you know. And so this poem definitely has a place always in my curriculum. And the other poem that I brought is Sky Jackson's Spoon Rest Mammies. And I like to teach this poem when we're talking about voice in writing. And kind of, like, we talk about the voice in this poem. Like, what is this voice? Like, what do you hear in this voice? And you know, what is it? And so they talk about often, like, the voice being just kind of resigned, resolved, and how, like, some students hear, like, kind of like they're seething beneath, like, mm-hmm. what's being, like, what we hear.
Right. Because I was going to say resign.
It's not quite yeah. resignation.
That seething feels like it's in the line breaks.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
yes.
right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And so at first it's like, well, she's kind of resigned. She kind of can't really say what she really thinks. And then it's like, well, beneath that, there's something really, really powerful, this anger.
Something that really stood out to me is the two different, using sell, I guess, in two slightly different senses. When the phrase, I hand her the bag, smile and say, but they sell.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which is what the mm-hmm. manager said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But they sell, my dear Sky. People buy them.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, the sentence being, the guy accepting donations said, I won't sell these.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the difference between they sell and I sell,
mm-hmm.
I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. And I guess what I like about this poem, like, especially when we're looking at all of these together, is like this is another one that's sort of like Cummings is like, going against convention where mm-hmm. we're not capitalizing.
Mm-hmm.
The line break is really there. Like there's punctuation, but there aren't really sentences mm-hmm. in that sense. Like the question marks are there, but there aren't periods. When we're talking about the way the meaning is made, the way that voice is controlled,
mm-hmm.
That's an interesting choice on the part of the writer to eliminate those conventions mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. And we also talk about, when we look at this poem, kind of the use of italics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, why is that? Why are those things italicized?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's usually something that creates a lot of discussion. Yeah.
Do students write anything after this discussion of spoon rest mummies?
Oh, yeah. You know, we usually have like a discussion board question.
Gotcha, yeah.
Or kind of like, what did you think of this poem?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, what did you think of the speaker in the poem being in this position? Have you found yourself in a similar mm-hmm. position?
Yeah. So yeah, we've been talking about how, you know, poetry can be used in the composition classroom.
Obviously, the three of us are poets, and so we're going to, I mean, we look for any excuse we can to kind of bring poetry in.
For sure.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I guess I enjoyed reading Martinez's article,
mm-hmm.
and just, she really did her homework to justify, you know, using poetry in the composition
right.
classroom.
And like even you said, it's so practical.
Yes, to, yeah. and to even mm-hmm. have them writing it, like writing exercises. So, you know, if you're a composition teacher out there and you're looking for some invigorating strategies, I recommend this article for that. I actually had the pleasure of meeting Valerie Martinez mm-hmm. once upon a time, and I think it was at the Dodge Poetry Festival. And I have here her book, Absence Luminescent. I wanted to maybe read her poem, The New World, as a closing, just to kind of express appreciation for her as a poet mm. and a scholar. So this is The New World. You are the kind of beauty which delivers me up to some midnight vision of water, dark, enigmatic, moving with figures so exotic they must be ancient animals. Somehow it happens that the new world emerges out of restlessness, the sleepless turning of colors in darkness. This is about love and not insomnia, about belonging and not the black mirrors of evening. The animals are gentle as sweet mothers, bold as feisty Amazons. And there I am, looking like a pharaoh's queen, abstract and beautiful. I couldn't tell whether I was asleep or waking, but this came after a memory of you slicing open a wild cucumber to reveal the cool orange pulp. It was Southern Africa, hot. Your hair was cut too short, like a boy's, and it was illegal to play with nature by cutting. But I wanted to see, wanted even more than the rhinos and newborn ostriches, the young elephants up close. It was blooming from the vine like a drop of green water, and nothing stopped you from granting my wish. Nothing, nothing. It was how much you wanted for my desire. How many images you've cut open, oh love, for me.
Hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for that reading, Monica.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah,
thank you for indulging me.
Yeah.
I just feel like with all the things that have been going on in the world, you know, it's something about this poem. I was like, mm-hmm. it feels right for today.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Gina. That was fun.
Oh, thank you, Gina.
It was a fun discussion.
It's great to be here. Great to be with both of you.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. And maybe again soon we'll talk about poetry some more.
That would be great.
In our comp classes or in our own lives.
Always a good thing.
All right.
Well, this has been the English 101 Experiment Podcast.
Thank you, listener. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the English 101 Experiment. Special thanks to Christopher Nicotera, instructor of music business at Delgado Community College, for his recording assistance. All music heard during this episode comes from the Free Music Archive. Specific titles and artists are listed on the English 101 Experiment website.